Welcome to This Song, the podcast that asks artists to talk about songs that shaped them in some way. Maybe a song changed the way they view their work, or better yet, maybe it changed the way they view the world. World-changing, life-changing songs. That's what we want. And hey, just a little before we get started, if you've been listening to this song and you like it, well, we would love a rating or a review in iTunes. You know, of course, if you listen to us on iTunes, it really helps us a bunch. And was it weird to just do an ask like that? Well, I did it. Anyway, I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen. And in this episode of This Song, I sat down with two Austin artists, Max Frost and Nikia. Both of them chose songs that helped them find their artistic voices. For Max, it's a song that he heard as a teenager that helped him find his own voice as a songwriter. And for Nikia, well, this song reminded him of the power, literally, of his own voice and set the bar for performance for him. So let's get started. First off, Max Frost. He's a singer, songwriter, producer, beat maker from Austin, Texas, who really blew everyone away in 2013 with his song White Lies, which I'll be playing a taste of later in the show. It's really quite good. And it's off his EP, Low, High, Low. And he has a new EP coming out September 18th called Intoxication. And a lot of his musical style can be traced to a song he heard late one night in his early teens. So here he is, Max Frost.
So when I was a kid, when I was about 13, I would stay up too late and I would watch MTV and VH1 when they would still show music videos, but only at late night. I think it was called Insomniac or something like that was the name of the show, where they basically would just kind of roll, you know, music videos from, sometimes it was from vintage stuff, usually it was from stuff that was charting at the time. And I remember it was the kind of stuff, like, I remember like Foo Fighters had some songs out, and I even remember, what was that Madonna song? The Madonna song, probably one of the last like singles she had on radio. Every little thing that you say, I'll do, cut up, I'm gonna do. Which, that's not the song I'm talking about.
Oh, okay,
but that's like what I remember, because as a kid, I remember all the music videos. It was always a person in this personality and this vibe and this song, and it was either a rock song or a pop song, or sometimes there was some more hip hop stuff. But it seemed very all in a specific lane and specific to a person. And then this video would come on, where it was. I remember the first thing that struck me about it before the song even was just, I was like, oh, why is this video is all just a cartoon or something? It looked like some kind of show that I might watch. And it was this guy, you know, cartoon guy up in this windmill. And the song started with that beat, though. The boom, 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 boom. And I've never, for me, that was just like, it was like a meteor hitting my brain, because it, first of all, the song was like, I never had heard anything. It almost reminded me of John Lennon in a way, the way he was singing. It almost reminded me of, like, off the White Album, like, I'm so tired.
I haven't slept a wing.
Like the kind of lazy singing, but over this beat that was like super driving, and it had these two different parts, and then there was a rapper on it, and it was super catchy. But it was, I guess, the first thing that was amazing to me about it was that it never occurred to me that, and I'd never seen anything that was like, this isn't a person. This clearly, because it felt like something like this couldn't be one person who made this and is singing that and then is rapping that and all that. So it was just like, it blew my mind that there was just like, sort of no one almost even really taking responsibility for the song in this way that freed it up in this way that just allowed it to sort of be like this insane other being.
And so you're talking about Feel Good Inc.
Yeah, Feel Good
Inc.
by the Gorillaz. Yeah, I probably should have said that earlier on, but people are going to be like,
well,
so what are you talking
about? As soon as you did the beginning like part, I was like, what's he talking, a windmill and a cartoon? Oh, of course, it's Gorillaz. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had you heard any Blur previous to that? Like, were you hip to Damon Albarn at all?
I probably had heard that Woohoo song. Woohoo! And I, you know, other than that, I was 13. I was just listening to, like, I was still digging into Hendrix and other stuff, and that was my world of music. But that was just sort of my little one window late at night into, like, what was happening then. And I remember, you know, maybe besides, like, Eminem, that being the first, like, because I've always been so heavy into the music of the past and living in that world that it's pretty rare, especially then, that I would look to something that was happening at that time that would, like, blow my mind like that. And that was sort of a thing where I was just like, what? Like,
do you think it was that you could hear kind of a John Lennon thing happening in the vocals, something that you could reach back to and kind of touch from the past, but also you were hearing something that sounded really modern and hip-hop influenced at the same time? Like,
totally, yeah. I mean, it felt familiar to me in a way. I mean, I think that's almost the way that people, you know, people can nitpick a lot of different things that they like or don't like about music. And at the end of the day, I really think you know immediately if you're going to really, really love something the second you hear it, because there's just something bizarrely familiar, which it isn't that you've heard it before and it isn't that it's that similar to something else. There's just that bizarre quality of, like, when you hear a great song for the first time, you're just like, oh my gosh, I've heard this for centuries in the other lives I lived, or
something
like that.
A weird magic of songs where it touches, like when a whole bunch of people connect to a song, you feel like it's maybe something more innate and inside of us, like going, you know, centuries old,
totally,
that
yeah.
we've all been hearing.
So that Gorillaz song was definitely like a past lives song for me or something, where I was just like, what?
Now, you at the time you were 16?
13.
And you're playing guitar at this point?
Yeah, I was playing guitar. I was probably playing some drums and bass, and, you know, I wasn't really that seriously writing songs, but I was definitely, you know, thinking about that kind of stuff. And it was, you know.
But mostly listening to music of, like, Jimi Hendrix and.
Yeah, you know, I was so deep into, like, you know, I wanted to be Stevie Ray Vaughan or something. You know, I was just about playing guitar and, you know, Led Zeppelin and things like that. Like, that was just what my world was about. So it was pretty rare that anything else made any sense to me other than that, you know.
So when you started writing songs and you started making your own music, is that Gorillaz song something that you kind of went back to? Like, let's see if we can.
Well, so that's something that it kind of took a while for me to circle around to, that because it was like, in the, you know, you, everyone I think has, if you're going to be a songwriter or an artist of any kind, you have the sort of life burden of finding your identity with it and finding who you are and what your voice is. And so I was definitely really confused about that in the beginning, because I was just, you know, my influences were really diverse, so I just would kind of pick a direction and go. I think in the beginning I was much more like a, almost just kind of like, yeah, like sort of an Americana singer-songwriter thing. Like, I, you know, I think Ryan Adams was probably a person where I first was really trying to be like, oh yeah, if I write songs like that, I can pull that off. You know, I wasn't trying to be him, but I was like, that's something I could see myself pulling off. So I bet she, that thing right out there through the door. And so that's when I really started writing a lot of songs. But then the sort of intersection that happened and when I really started producing music was when I just started linking with hip-hop guys that were in Austin. And that sort of displaced everything that I was doing as this sort of blues-based Americana songwriter, because they wanted me to do hooks on their beats and stuff like that. And so then I became really interested in making production for that kind of music, which, once that was sort of in my bag, that was kind of the missing piece of the Gorillaz thing. And once, you know, that was definitely a part of me connecting everything to sort of, you know, fit in a similar lane where, you know, it's about. But I would say that's almost, in a way, I still borrow from the concept of that Gorillaz song for most of the stuff I'm trying to do, which is a really, really big backbeat and a really, really strong, forward, aggressive, you know, production with a very laid back vocal on the record. That's kind of the vibe.
Yeah, and I mean, that Gorillaz record really is, if you're into production, that's really like a that whole, it's just a production record. You know, it's Damon Albarn saying, like, I don't want to just be, it's not just me. It's like me collaborating with a comic book artist, collaborating with, like.
I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that Danger Mouse guy had something to do with that song,
too. Doesn't he have something to do with everything? Danger Mouse had something to do with Feel Good Inc.?
I know I sound crazy, but I've looked it up before, and I've been like, really? Whoa. Because when you listen to it, it kind of has to be him. Because, I mean, I don't, it sounds so
I don't
much
know.
Like
I'll check it out. Yeah,
the stuff
for
he
sure.
did, you know.
Yeah. Motown with your sound, you in the blink. Gonna bite the dust, can't fight with us. With your sound, you kill the ink. So don't stop, get it. Are you a Damon Albarn fan, just in general? Like, I only ask because I really, like,
I mean,
love everything he does.
I would say I'm, like, pretty aware of a lot of his stuff. I definitely haven't had that moment yet where I've gone and, like, looked at it from the perspective of, like, what's his... Like, I bet I know more stuff of his than I realize.
Yeah.
But I haven't ever really gone down a path of, like, okay, so what's this guy done? But I definitely, it's crazy that I never have, because everything I've ever heard him do, I think, is amazing.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I haven't gone and looked him up further yet, but
maybe
I should.
Maybe you will. In the age of the internet, you could go, you could get on your phone right now and learn everything you wanted to know about him, you know? But that's really interesting that song that you heard when you were 13, when did you start to like develop a sound that had more of like a hip hop mixed with?
Probably when I was more like 18. Because that's when I finally had, it was like around the time I graduated high school that I finally got like a laptop and really started making beats, to where then when I made my own songs, that was, you know, an element of it.
Yeah.
So that was, it took a while, but it was always sort of there. The seed had been planted kind of by that song.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank
for,
you.
For letting us know. I'm picking up real estate. Max Frost, White Lies. See? I told you it was good. You can totally hear that Gorillaz influence, and he just randomly saw the video one night. It goes to show you never know when the next big inspiration is going to hit you with some mind-expanding excellence that will influence your future self. So kids, keep watching those videos. And I'm going to say that I was more than a wee bit embarrassed that I didn't know that Danger Mouse, aka Brian Burton, not only did he have something to do with Feel Good Inc., but he produced Demon Days, the record that Feel Good Inc. is on. I actually considered editing the part where I didn't know that out, but I left it in. I mean, as a fan, I feel like I should know that, or maybe it's okay because it means I'm just a fan and not a super fan of Damon Albarn. I don't know. I kind of get pretty crazy fan-ish when it comes to Damon Albarn. Anyway, on to the next guest. My next guest is Nikia. He is also an Austin artist. He's released 3 records under his own name, the most recent being Drown in the Crimson Tide. And speaking of voices, which, if you haven't noticed, is kind of the theme for this show, well, Nikia was on the first season of The Voice, the wildly successful TV show. He has a fabulous voice. And for his song, he chose one that made him reconnect with his love of singing. And I'll also preface this by saying that when he came in for the interview, I wasn't quite sure how to operate the recording gear, and we spent some time with him helping me try to figure it out. So, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, Nikia. I'm here with Nikia at the KTX studios, and we've been hanging out. You've been helping me learn the gear. So, what is an important song that you want to tell the world about?
This is a duet, a live duet version of, I guess that's why they call it the blues, by Elton John featuring Mary J. Blige.
Don't wish it away, don't look at it like it's forever. Between you and me, I can honestly say.
Where did you find this?
I think this was around 2000, maybe 2001. I was living in Alabama, and Napster was, you know, all the rage. Everybody was downloading music from Napster, and Elton had put out a new record, and there was no record stores nearby to me, but I knew it was out, so I searched for the record and found this one track and downloaded it, burned it to a CD. And
the way we used to.
That's right. And I was currently at that time using my little brother's car. So I was driving around Fort Payne, Alabama, where I'm originally from, and listening to these tracks that I had downloaded, and that particular one just really, really stuck with me.
So how old were you around this time?
Let's see. I would have been 26, I think, something around there.
Okay. And so what was it about this?
25, maybe.
I mean, because you had heard the song before, obviously, like heard sure. Elton John himself do it.
Absolutely.
So what was it about this version, though, that kind of caught you more than other songs?
Mary J. Blige.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all Mary. There's just so much raw emotion in her performance, and because it was not super early in her career, she'd been out for a while, but because of it being one of the first times she'd really had, I think, a moment like this on stage with somebody of that caliber, you can hear in her voice, to me anyway, this is my interpretation, that she's kind of in awe of the moment.
Were you playing music at the time that you heard it?
No, at the time I was getting ready to go work for a record label in Chicago. And I was working as a field rep for them, actually, in the Alabama, Atlanta area. So I wasn't even really doing music at the time. I had done music, and but I had put all that kind of on hold because I thought, oh, I'm going to be in the music business, you know?
Right.
And
on.
I loved that part of it, but this was one of those moments where I suddenly remembered the reason I love the music business is because I love to sing, and I love to sing along with songs. That's how I got my start, was singing along to other people's music.
And so did you, is there a lapse between the time that you hear that song and then you actually do start performing music again?
Probably between hearing that song and the time that I booked my first gig, I would say was less than a year.
Oh, wow. And do you think that like that, it sounds like it ignited the fire within you, or reignited the fire to perform within you.
Yeah. I mean, it was really, you know, trying to emulate her voice. You know, that's again, that's kind of how I got started, was emulating Steve Perry or, you know, Hank Williams Jr. or Simon Le Bon from Duran Duran. Trying to be them vocally, and then, you know, driving around in my little brother's car with nobody else in there, screaming at the top of my lungs like Mary J. Blige does in the song, and thinking like, oh man, I can sing like that.
So you started singing kind of soul and the blues when you got to Austin.
Yeah.
When you sing soul music, is there always a part of you that's trying to like approach that Mary J. Blige singing with Elton John moment? I mean,
I think so. I think that it's a combination of that and, you know, Eddie Floyd, you know, records that my dad would listen to when I was a kid. I don't want to lose this good thing. Sit around and try to sing like them, you know. or weirdly enough, you know, like I said earlier, like Duran Duran or Phil Collins, you know, all these great 80s singers. But for that particular song, it really, even today, I can't listen to that song without feeling just really moved emotionally and really just moved to sing along.
And so it's not so much the song that got you. It wasn't like the lyrics or the melody. It's Mary J. Blige interpreting the song and like just making you totally feel it in a way that you had never felt that song before, or just in a way that we want to feel, you know, like.
You know how singers, you know, sometimes we find just enough space between the lyric and the break to fill in something, just like a guitar player would, you know, or something. There's a moment where Mary J. does this towards the end of the song, where she comes back in and, you know, she's really on top of it, but she builds, she leads into that chorus with this, you know, just, oh, I can't even do it right now, but it's so powerful and almost blood curdling. You know, it sounds like somebody is strangling her.
Right.
Hearing her do that, I remember thinking to myself, as I became a singer, I wasn't really a singer at that point, but a professional singer, and thinking, I never want to sing something that I don't really mean, you mm-hmm. know, and I want it to come from a place that feels so real that when an audience member watches or hears me sing it, that they think, God, that guy, you know, he knows what he's talking about.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking and helping me learn this recording software. I can't wait to listen to all the music that you talked about.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure hanging out with you today.
Awesome. Thanks, Nikki.
I was an outsider kid, picked on at school for the things that I did. Oh, mama, she was crazy, daddy was gone. Same old story, same old song. My whole life's been a shame, it's been tough being this way. Can't make others happy and keep yourself sad. That ain't what to do, that ain't where it's at.
What you're hearing below me is Tight from Drown in the Crimson Tide, Nakia's latest release, and you can hear it. That Mary J. Blige-esque honesty and intensity that Nakia wants to get across, he goes for it. In fact, he told me a story during the interview, and it didn't make it into the final cut, but I love this story. So Sharon Jones was playing a show in Austin, and Nakia opened for her. And then during her set, Sharon Jones invited Nakia up on stage to sing with her, although it was a song that he did not know and had never heard before. So he, of course, went up, and he just started listening and singing back, and he was going for it. And he was going for it, and Sharon Jones started going for it. Then they're both going for it together, and it really created this great moment, and luckily someone got it on videotape, and I will send you a link. I'm not going to send it to you. I'm actually going to put it on this song page on the KUTX website, but I will post that link so you can see what Nakia does when he goes for it. It's pretty amazing. Now, before I forget, both Max Frost and Nakia are nominees for Black Fret Grant, and I want to tell you about Black Fret because I think it's a pretty amazing Austin organization. They are creating a patronage system for live music. You know, like the opera has patrons. Well, they want to give the same support to live musicians. Full disclosure, I was awarded one of their grants last year, which is how I know. They're awesome. They're a membership-driven organization. And if you are looking for a way to be involved in the Austin music scene, well, I highly recommend you check them out. In fact, on August 28th at the North Door, both Max Frost and Nakia will be playing a show for members along with Gina Chavez, who we should really get in here. But I didn't want to leave Max Frost and Nakia without mentioning Black Fret. That's it. We've come to the end of yet another This Song episode. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9 Austin. This episode was produced and edited by myself, Elizabeth McQueen, and David Sanger, who happens to be my husband. The interviews were recorded by Cliff Hargrove and myself, my interview with help from Nakia, of course. Special thanks to Peter Babb, who books all the bands in Studio 1A. We have over 300 a year. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hardproof Afrobeat. You should go see them live. They're amazing. You can email us at thissong@kutx.org or tweet us at thissongkutx. You can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, Liner Notes, Song of the Day, and Austin Music Minute on iTunes. You can follow us on Stitcher. And hey, we know you're busy, but if you have a moment, we would love a rating or review on iTunes. I know I said it earlier in the show, but I'm saying it again. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.